Drive Time on RTE Radio 1, sponsored by Zurich. It's your future. Let Zurich help you protect it. Talk to us today about life and serious illness cover.
Airlines are facing fines of up to €5,000 per undocumented passenger as the government tries to handle the ongoing migration crisis here. The proposals from Justice Minister Helen McEntee will be brought to Cabinet this week. For more on this, I'm joined by a partner and head of Immigration and International Law Department at KOD Lyons solicitor Stephen Kerwin, and also by Fine Gael Senator Barry Ward. You're both very welcome. Welcome indeed to the programme. I might come to you, Barry Ward of Fine Gael, first of all. This new law, what is the proposal?
Well, essentially, any carrier, it's not just airlines, as I understand it, it would also be ferry companies, but anybody bringing passengers to Ireland from outside Ireland or the UK is required to establish before they carry the person to Ireland that they are entitled to come to Ireland either because they have a valid passport or a transit visa or a visa. If they fail to do that, then the moment they're subject to a fine of €4,000 per passenger, and the proposal is to increase that to €5,000. And it's really about sending out a clear signal to airlines.
Okay, before we discuss the aim, what if they're fleeing war, for example, and they're seeking international protection here? They don't have their documents.
Well, of course, it depends on where they're coming from, but they are not entitled to board a flight without documents. There is a provision in the Immigration Act 2003.
So can I cut you off there for 1 second? Because this is absolutely mm-hmm. clear. Maybe it does, maybe it doesn't depend. If they're legitimately international protection applicants and they are fleeing, let's say they're coming from Gaza or Ukraine and bombs are dropping overhead, they left in a hurry, you don't expect them to have documents, do you?
No, and obviously Ukraine is a different case, but
yeah. So what do you do in that situation?
They're coming from another country, then it's obviously open to them to apply for international protection in that country.
What if they're joining family here?
Well, they're still entitled to apply for international protection in the other country.
Yeah, but what if let's tease this out now. Let's go slow. Mm-hmm. So what if they do want to join their kids, for example, who are here? So what do you do? Let's say they arrive up to the airline and they don't have their passport even or visas or anything like that. What do they say?
Well, I suppose the way they do that is not by boarding an airline without documentation. And the provisions in the Immigration Act 2003 are there to ensure that airlines carry out their due diligence. Well, there are other ways to do it. I mean, certainly they can enter the country legally, first of all, obviously by approaching an Irish embassy, seeking a visa, or there are other mechanisms available. This is a mechanism that is supposed to put on carriers, mostly airline companies, an obligation to ensure that the person who boards their flight, they can establish who they are and that they have the appropriate documentation. And that's what the fines relate to. It doesn't specifically address the situation where you're dealing with international protection. You're dealing with people who are entering Ireland illegally, and it's a mechanism that places a burden on those who are bringing them into Ireland to stop them from doing that and penalise them if they're not following the rules.
But isn't that why we have the IPAS process?
Well, no, they're two unrelated processes, because what the Immigration Act 2003 does in Section 2 is it places an obligation on carriers. And what it says to an airline or a ferry company is you may not transport somebody to Ireland illegally. If you do it, then there's a fine involved and there's a process that has to be followed. International protection is a different system and it is available to an individual. The Immigration Act in Section 2 deals with carriers.
This law doesn't discriminate, really, as we've just established.
It does. No, it specifically Section 2, Subsection 1, that it applies
to carriers.
In the example
that I gave you, you see, let's say we're fleeing war and we arrive at the airport trying desperately to rejoin family in this country. We didn't have time to get any documentation together. You're mm-hmm. saying that there should be another legal way for me to go, but there are bombs falling overhead. What do you expect the person to do?
No, what I'm saying, well, first of all, there are no direct flights, for example, from Gaza. There are no direct flights from lots of the kind of countries we're talking about. The mechanism for somebody to claim international protection in Ireland is an individual right that person has under international law. What the Section 2 in the Immigration Act 2003 does is it places an obligation on carriers transporting people directly to Ireland to ensure that they are legally entitled to enter Ireland. And I'm sure you'll agree, Cormac, that the reverse situation will be a farce. If you said to airlines, you can take anybody on and they can arrive and there's no obligation on you whatsoever to even check their passport before they get on the plane, that's an intolerable situation as well.
Okay.
And what this does is it places an obligation on them to apply the procedures at the point that the person is boarding the aircraft in the other country.
Okay, let me bring in Stephen Kerwin here, who's partner and head of Immigration and the International Law Department at KOD Lyons Solicitors. Stephen, you're very welcome. Will the new proposal be effective?
To be quite frank with you, I don't think it's going to change anything. And I suppose what we're we tend to forget about in these types of debates is, well, what actually happens on the flip side? So we talk about increasing carrier sanctions. Are there going to be other nefarious means by which traffickers and other people controlling passports are going to circumvent that process? And to be quite frank, you know, we've had this discussion 25 years ago, or, you know, 20 years ago, when people were coming in on the backs of ferries and found dead in the backs of containers in various ports around the country. And I wonder, by focusing exclusively on this, well, first of all, is it going to affect those such as the likes of traffickers, etc.? Or are we simply sending up a dog whistle rather than practically dealing with the issues at hand?
Do you think this could be a dog whistle?
Well, frankly, I think it is, and I think without getting into the politics of it, I mean, it certainly is sending the right message to a certain cohort of voters that are there that this is a pandemic or a particular problem, without looking at what the alternative could be. And I suppose the other thing is you're now putting, and again, you continue to put life and death situations in the hands of airlines and ferries, taking on staff who are possibly untrained in relation to dealing with some of these cases, and dealing with things like human trafficking, when we have a perfectly valid and good system to deal with these complaints once you actually arrive on Irish shores.
What question would you pose to Barry Warr then in terms of all of this?
Well, I mean, Barry's a very experienced litigator and legislator. I mean, Barry doesn't need me to talk at him in relation to why I believe measures like this are not.
No, but I'm asking you because what you said there, that this could be viewed as a dog whistle and the airlines mightn't have staff to deal with life and death situations as they would present. You said there were alternatives as well. So
the biggest alternative is to actually concentrate on processing asylum claims efficiently and fairly. I think that's certainly the first thing. Second thing is, as you've pointed out, Cormac, there a number of minutes ago, we do have mechanisms in terms of inadmissibility and returns under the Dublin 3 regulations, what will be returns under the EU PACT. So there are systems that are in place, and I don't see how it's fair to necessarily put our obligations back on airline carriers.
But they're two distinct processes, says Barry Warren.
I mean, and certainly I have to accept that while they're two distinct processes, they're overlapping. I mean, and that's the reality. It doesn't deal with the question of traffickers. It doesn't deal with the question of trafficking people into the country. It doesn't deal with vulnerability or vulnerable issues. And it certainly doesn't deal with the question of other ways of getting into Irish ports. So
you're not dealing with reality, Barry Warr here. Can I put that to you? And it'll have little or no effect.
Well, Can I first of all agree with Stephen in relation to training people to spot human trafficking? This is something I have called for in the Shannon. We need to be educating, educating people on how to recognise the signs of it. But at the same time, it is never the obligation of an airline to identify a situation where or make a judgment in relation to a person seeking international protection. That is not their role. They would not welcome that role, and you couldn't possibly put that role into their hands. That is a job for the state. No, we're not at all. That is a job for the International Protection Office in Dublin.
How in the name of God do you expect airline staff who are behind the kiosks at airports and they're there to process the passports of people who are taking the flight and the tickets, and suddenly you get an international protection applicant making their case to them, would they know where to look?
Well, hang on a second, Cormac. Anybody listening to your show who's ever boarded a flight will know that when you go to the check-in desk or if you check in online, you have to submit your passport details. That is standard process in every country in Europe, by the way, as well as in Ireland. Now, if you're suggesting that international protection applicants should be going to the check-in desk in Charles de Gaulle or Schiphol or something like that, that's an absolute nonsense.
No, okay. So let's do role play here, Barry. You're the airline staff. You're the airline staff. I'm the international protection applicant. Please, sir, let me on to the flight because I'm trying to rejoin my family. I'm being persecuted in my home country.
But Cormac, you couldn't possibly expect check-in staff of an airline to be making an adjudication.
Please let me rejoin my family. What do you say to me? However, I have a right to...
What I say to you is I cannot let you board the flight because it's against the law.
No, it's not. I have a right to seek international protection in Ireland.
In Dublin. Cormac, let's if you want to talk
Barry,
about reality...
Barry, the reality is these people have a right, according to Liam Hurrick of the ICCL, to seek international protection in Ireland.
Yes.
You're denying that right.
There is a whole office where we have doubled the number of staff in Dublin, full of professionals who deal specifically with those applications. It would be grossly unfair to ask a check-in staff of an airline or Aer Lingus or Ryanair or something like that in a foreign airport to be making adjudication on an international protection application. That's not their job. They have no training, they have no skills, and they have
no
powers to make that adjudication.
But you're not allowing these people get as far as the IPAS office.
No, many of them get here, and there are ways for them to get here. But the point is, when the minister is doing here is saying to airlines, you must abide by the law. And if somebody's coming to check in for a flight and you don't check their documents or you don't establish that they have documents, then you're breaking the law and there will be consequences for that.
Stephen,
that is a reasonable, and by the way, it's true of every European country.
Isn't that reasonable, that request, Stephen?
Well, I'm saying Barry's answered the question for us. It absolutely isn't the job of the airline to determine whether or not someone should be an international protection applicant. And by putting that barrier in place, you are simply denying the person, respectfully, that procedural right. Now, having said that, does there have to be balance and does there have to be rules and checks? Look, absolutely. But to think that it's actually solving a problem, I mean, it's not. It simply isn't.
Is it a dog whistle, Barry?
No, what it is addressing is a situation where there's a signal being sent to airlines that there are rules in place that need to be abided by. At the moment, there's a €4,000 fine. The proposal is to up that to €5,000, which is called a Class A fine under the Fines Act 2010. Again, that's a reasonable measure by the minister.
Is it a signal being sent to the public that a problem is being sorted when it's not?
No, I don't think so at all. I don't accept what Stephen says about this being a denial of a right of a person. Anybody who lands in Ireland is entitled to seek international protection, and that's what the international protection office is there
for. But they won't get to land in Ireland under your proposal.
But it is not Ireland's job to make it possible for everybody in the world who wants to land in Ireland.
You can't have it both ways. You can't say you're fulfilling the international. Hang on a second. You can't have it both ways. No, hang on. Please let me put it to you. You said Ireland is fulfilling its international obligations in terms of asylum applicants. You can't say that in the one hand and say we won't allow people into the country without passports on another, because they could be in a Venn diagram, they could be in both categories.
Let me clarify this for you. The obligation on any country is for when a person lands in the country and seeks international protection to deal with that application in accordance with law. There is no obligation on any country to open its gates and say anybody who wants to come and make an application
open its gates.
That is not
language now that is a dog whistle, Barry.
Well, it is absolutely not. And if you look at my record on this issue, I've been very clear. If you want to talk, what I've said very clearly is the government accords with its international obligations. Its international obligations is not to facilitate travel to this country by anybody who wants to apply for international protection. That is exactly what you just said a moment ago.
No, it's
you
not.
You suggested that we were denying people their rights by not allowing them come to Ireland. That's what you said. We have no obligation to so do. What we do have an
What's
obligation
wrong with what
to
I said?
Do,
and this is Stephen, can you point
we
out
don't,
maybe
we
I
don't
am incorrect.
Have to facilitate them coming to Ireland.
Yeah, maybe I am incorrect. Maybe Barry is right that you open the gates and allow everyone in, and you can't allow that either, can you?
Well, that's why we have inadmissibility procedures. That's why we have the Dublin III regulations. That's why this particular government has brought in obviously the migration pact, which is going to obviously take effect over the next couple of cycles. I don't accept that, and we do have a procedure to deal with those unmeritorious cases. The question is whether or not, you know, the government are going to abide by international law or not. And I mean, look, I'm not suggesting that the fines can't be introduced, but I'm suggesting not only are they ineffective, but there is a procedure. And that is exactly the whole purpose of having an inadmissibility process.
Can you explain to me, how the government would not be abiding by international law if they bring this in?
Well, no. So just to be very clear, airline carrier sanctions, in my view, are legitimately allowed, I suppose, are the best way, permitted under law, permitted under EU law, permitted under national law. What I've been trying to suggest is that by trying to frustrate someone's right to apply for asylum, and that's not to grant someone that right, just to be very clear, that is a frustration of process. And ultimately what it's doing is it's forcing people underground. It's forcing people into unsafe modes of travel. And that's why 20 odd years ago, we had people arriving dead in Rosslare Airport. You know, that's a matter of record. Why is it not happening now? And the answer is clearly a safer mode of travel is the humane way to do it. You deal with the application that comes to your shores, you deal with it quickly, you deal with it efficiently, and you deal with it in accordance with the law, and then you make a decision as to what happens thereafter.
Do you accept, Barry Ward, that with this proposal you could be forcing people into the arms of people traffickers?
I don't. I think what Stephen said there is right. We are obliged to deal with the application, the applicant that comes to our shores. And we do that. And that's why Helen McEntee doubled the number of people in the International Protection Office. And we're greatly reducing the application times to deal with all of those applications. Nowhere in international law is a country required to facilitate the arrival in the state by somebody who wants to seek international protection. But let me say this. We absolutely need to tackle people trafficking. We must do nothing that will encourage it. But it has never been the case that people have been allowed to board an aircraft without the relevant documentation. That hasn't changed. What Helen McEntee is doing here is putting in place a very clear signal to the airlines, and this is not addressed to people traffickers or individuals, but to the airlines, that they must abide by the rules that apply. They do, by the way, generally, okay. But it's a very clear signal in relation to checking passports as people board aircraft or ferries.
Senator Barry Warr, thank you very much indeed, and the partner ahead of Immigration and International Law Department at KOD Lyons, thank you very much for that.